The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Now, my next guest was known once as Napoleon. He was a member of Tupac Outlaws, and he is now a motivational speaker, and he has been on some journey through his life. Mutabil, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Born in New York, but you now live where?
I now live in between Los Angeles, Dubai, Saudi Arabia, pretty much between the Middle East and the West Coast of America.
Okay. And why did you spend so much time in Saudi Arabia?
Well, I have business there. I have a coffee business, my own coffee brand, and we had a shop in UAE, in Ras Al Khaimah, and now we have two coffee trucks in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
Okay. Yes. But you got that via a circuitous route. And tell us about your involvement with Tupac Outlaws.
Yes, I was in a group called The Outlaws that Tupac put together. Myself was one of the original members of the group. I think I joined the group maybe early ages, 14 years old, and I've been with Tupac up until he passed away. After his death, I continued to do music with The Outlaws until I got to I think I would say 2005. If I'm not mistaken, I walked away from the music industry, decided to, you know, take some different paths in life.
I'll get to that in a moment. But tell us about working with Tupac, who remains an iconic figure to many. What is it now, over 20 years after his death?
Yeah, Pac was a genius, a very hard worker. You know, he was a type of individual that I didn't really see too many other artists with the same work ethics as Tupac. You know, he was the type of person, 3, 4, 5 songs a day. And he would go weeks in the studio. So you can imagine the amount of work that he had. You know, he was a very hard worker, very talented individual.
And what was the lifestyle like when you were part of his entourage?
Well, the lifestyle, we had some wild days and some calm days. It was like a roller coaster with Tupac. You know, anything can go. But most of the time, I would say he was very disciplined. You know, he was the type of individual. He wasn't doing too much partying and clubbing. He'd rather be in the studio or on the movie set working. He was a very disciplined individual.
And the people around him, were you as disciplined when you were
No, we wasn't. We was always looking for a way to escape him. Like, how can we go have fun? This guy wanted to be in the studio all day. We was teenagers, so we wanted to go have a good time, you know?
Tell us a little bit about your past, though, before that, because I was reading about you, and you're part of this documentary, The Napoleon, Life of an Outlaw, which has been shown in Griffith College tomorrow evening.
Yes.
You were 3 years of age when your parents were murdered.
Yes. My parents got murdered when I was 3 years old. And this was something, you know, that growing up, unfortunately, in my environment in America, it was a violent city, a violent town. So I had many friends that didn't have parents, or one parent is dead or the other one is in jail. So unfortunately, it was the norm. At least they wanted to make it the norm at our particular time, you know, growing up.
Where did you grow up?
In Newark, New Jersey, Irvington, New Jersey.
And your parents were from where originally?
Well, my father was American, black. Both of them was American, but my father was considered African-American. My mother was Latino, Puerto Rican, and Cuban.
What happened to them? I know you were three at the time. It must still be a difficult thing to talk about. But what happened to your parents?
Well, they say, you know, I hear all types of stories. My uncle might have one version. Family friends have another version. But it all comes down to money. My father was a businessman who was involved in some dangerous business, especially at that particular time. He was into selling loose diamonds, you know, so I don't know how he was getting them, where he was getting them from. But of course, if you selling diamonds, then you're going to carry a lot of cash most of the time, you know. So it was just a situation where the friends of my father had an opportunity to rob him, and they decided to kill him, you know.
And your mother as well.
And my mother as well, yes.
Who brought you up then?
My grandparents, you know, the parents of my father, they brought us up. My mother's parents also played a major role, but we moved into the house with my grandparents, my father, mother, and my grandmother did a very good job, at least to the best of our ability, you know.
Yeah, how did you manage then to, what was your upbringing like that with the environment, if there was poverty and if there also was drugs and violence?
For sure, man. It definitely was a way I wanted to get up out of that environment. You know, I knew from an early age that this is not the way that I wanted to continue doing the paths that I seen even some of my family members, some of my friends, my brothers. I knew that I had to make a change, you know, and that's when I turned to rap music. You know, I figured that would be my escape. You know, I grew up in an environment where I used to walk outside and see literally friends that probably should be in the 8th grade studying, but they selling drugs, you know, and other guys around the corners carrying guns. So I was able to say to myself, this is not what I want for myself. So
why does that happen, do you think? Why does parts of American society end up like that?
unfortunately, I think poverty make people do some, you know, some decisions that they probably wouldn't do if they had better opportunities. You know, for example, if you have a kid who come from a impoverished home household, and he can go outside and make $1,000 a day or $500 a day, and selling drugs, most likely he's gonna go that route. You understand? Where he see his parents probably making that $2,000 a month, if so. You know, so I think it's just a way that, you know, poverty lead to these type of neighborhoods, unfortunately.
But is there any sort of community action against the impact of the drugs to sort of stop people taking advantage of others in a community?
You have so many outreach programs in a community, you know, but it's very difficult because it's the drugs are coming in there. The weapons are coming in there. We don't know exactly where they're coming from. You know, it's different levels and different people that's involved. It's so many different levels. When you get to the top, you don't know how it gets in the neighborhood, but it seemed like it's an endless battle. You know, it seemed like it's an endless battle. Like, I seen a videotape of a guy from Chicago. He's an ex-gang member. He said when he was growing up, they would wake up in the morning and go outside and play and just see carts of guns in their neighborhood. And they don't know how it got there, you know? And somebody bringing them into these neighborhoods, you know?
You got out of it via music. Why did you give up music?
I changed my life, you know? I wanted to take more of a positive route. I accepted the religion of Islam and, you know, I just wanted to grow past that life. You know, I was in the music industry since I was maybe 13, 14 years old up until maybe in my 20s. So after a while, you say, you know what, I had enough. I lost a lot of my friends. I lost Gaddafi. I lost Tupac. So it wasn't the same for me. You know, my love of the music wasn't never the same after.
Why was it? The music was not getting you away from violence and criminality, or?
Believe it or not, in the music industry, it might even be worse. You know, because especially in hip-hop music, we have a lot of the people that's involved in the rap industry that's from the ghettos, that's from the streets, and now they're making millions of dollars. So you see criminal activities on a whole nother level, you know? So, unfortunately, you know.
And drug use as well.
And drug use and all types of stuff on a level that I never seen in the streets. So I was surprised that when I actually got into the music industry, I said, man, this is worse. This is worse than the environment I was trying to escape, you know.
So what was the tipping point for you that persuaded you to change?
I think the way I was living my life, you know, waking up every day and drugs and alcohol and partying and clubbing, after a while, I just got tired of it. You know, I had to say it have to be another way I can live my life to enjoy my life than the way that I was living. You know?
So why then religious conversion as well? Why was that necessary?
Well, the religion of Islam, it allowed me to discipline myself, you know, because it's a religion that it stopped me from drinking. You know, one of the first things stopped me from drinking and partying and doing these things. It made me want to have a family. I became a family man, made me want to raise my kids differently than the way I was raised, you know.
And what year did you convert?
I converted, man, I would say 2005. Man, I'm getting old, man. My memory's gone, but I think 2005.
But what's the reaction like in the United States when you make a decision to convert? Because that, of course, in the aftermath of 9/11 and given the changing attitudes towards people who believe in the Islamic faith, to make that conversion as a native-born American, what sort of reaction do you get to that?
I think a lot of people don't know that in America, especially like in the inner cities, in the Black African American communities, in the Latino community, now Islam has always been there. You know, in Philadelphia, for example, you have 3-generation American Muslims, but the media don't really show that side. They usually show like the Arabs or the Asians, but they don't show that in America you actually have indigenous American Muslims, you know? And one thing I would say, most American people, they're good people. They don't really care what religion you practice. As long as you're good to them, they're good to you. And this is the majority of the American people, and they're very supportive, you know? So most Americans are just friendly people.
Yeah, but I suppose in the communities in which you grew up, it's not unusual. But in the wider American community, have you felt any sort of backlash about the fact of prominently becoming a member of the Islamic faith?
I think I might not experience any backlash. I think that maybe even some family members, they had a lot of questions. Some friends, they had a lot of questions that I was able to clarify what Islam really is and what the religion really called to clarify the difference between practicing Islam and terrorism, that Islam doesn't allow these things, and that even Muslims, we don't agree with people going around killing innocent people, you know? So I had to clarify a lot of things to people, you know, for sure.
Do you actually get it even if you're traveling between the United States and Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, each time when you go home to the United States, do you end up having to explain yourself to the authorities?
Nah. It was a couple years that I had to, but I think now they know that they know what's up.
You know, even in the Donald Trump era, where there's been more of this sort of crackdown.
Yeah, now it's okay. You know, I traveled, I think, to America twice. No, one time since Donald Trump been the president, and it was easy. You know, like I said, most America, I think the media blow things out of proportion and make it seem like it's this big fight. And if you Muslim in America, you will have a bad life and they're going to get you. But it's not like that. You know what I mean? Most Americans, like I say, just good.
So do you think has Donald Trump changed life for American Muslims?
I think he did. Not even for just Muslims alone. I think in general, unfortunately, like now that he's the president, I never seen this many openly racist racism going on in my life. You know, I never really seen this. So as an American, I'm shocked to see the things that's coming. It seemed like it's a separation between, you know, people that want America this way, pretty much want to take it backwards, if I can say, and the people that want to move it forward. So you see that split, you know.
Okay, as I mentioned, you're here for a screening of a documentary tomorrow evening. What's the documentary all about?
Documentary is about my life, you know, growing up in New Jersey, witnessing the death of my parents, and how I got involved in the music industry, met Tupac, my days in the music industry, and things like that. Pretty much just about my life.
How did you get the name Napoleon?
This is from Tupac. You know, as you can see, I'm not a tall guy. So he used to say that I have the Napoleon complex.
And then did you give it up in 2005 when you gave up the music industry?
No, a lot of people still call me Napoleon. So I just figured I'd stick with it. You know, if they call me Napoleon, I don't make a big issue from it.
Mutabil, thank you very much for taking the time to join us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, buddy.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.